Madam President, I move that further proceedings, the roll call be dispensed with, and the sergeant in arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Rabbi Lynn Liberman, Jewish Community Chaplain from St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
In prayer, may the gift of leadership awaken in us a vocation, keeping us mindful of the providence that calls us to serve. As high over the mountains the eagle spreads its wings, may our perspective be larger than the view from the foothills. When the way is flat and dull in times of gray endurance, may our imagination continue to evoke horizons. May we have the wisdom to read time clearly and know when the seed of change will flourish. In our hearts, may there be a sanctuary for the stillness where clarity is born. May our work be infused with passion and creativity and have the wisdom to balance compassion and challenge. And may we welcome our own vulnerability as the ground where healing and truth join. May our integrity of soul be our first ideal, the source that will guide and bless our work. From the Hebrew tradition, Oseh shalom bimromav, hu ya'aseh shalom aleinu v'al kol yoshvei tevel, v'imru amen. May the one above who brings peace to us bring peace to all the inhabitants of this great state and the entire world. And let us say, amen.
Amen.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and
all. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Wieger, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 5, a bill for an act relating to higher education, establishing a budget for higher education. Senate file number 5 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 5 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a light conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move that the reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. House files 846 and 844 are given their second reading. Introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. This is an author's motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I'd like to call for a recess. The Senate caucus will meet in room 107 immediately following this recess.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Our caucus will meet in room 112. Are we talking about hour and a half? What's the time frame?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Hahn, we are hoping for an hour.
So that's 120.
Thank you, Madam President.
On the motion to recess, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
Dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. The members, the list is on your desk.
The first bill on special orders is number 121 on general orders, Senate File 1120, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President and members of the Senate. I am happy to present Senate File 1120 to you today. This is a bill, by the way, on your desk you'll see two letters. One is a letter from the Minnesota Department of Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jessen, and in that letter of support for this bill, the commissioner clearly indicates to us that at the Minnesota Security Hospital, the subject of this amendment, that there are clients who volitionally assault other clients and staff. And that term volitional is very important in relationship to this bill because we're talking about high workplace violence in this facility. And some of it's done by some of the clients who have been ordered to the court there who may be creating havoc and injury to other patients and staff, and not necessarily out of a psychotic or a mental illness, but out of a personality disorder or out of fully conscious and volitional acts of harming other people. The other letter is from the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees, also urging us to listen to the concerns that they have about workplace violence and this initiative in this bill to try to give one tool to them in order to deal with it. And what this bill does is it adds to the statute that allows a crime of fourth degree assault to employees of the Minnesota Sex Offenders Program and to ANOCA's facility, and adds to that statute the Minnesota Security Hospital. And as a result of that, it means that we expand that definition of a secure facility to include the entire Minnesota Security Hospital. And it's the crime is amended to include assaults by persons who are committed there, even if they're committed only for competency examination. And then there would be a penalty of the fourth degree assault against, if there's an assault against an employee who is working with the mentally ill in that facility, and that assault by a patient causes serious bodily harm. If you read the language of the bill, you'll see that the penalty is 2 years and or a $4,000 fine. One of the things that we changed in this bill during judiciary that was in the original language of the bill, and it was a change that we really engaged in because there was a request from the Disability Law Center that there be a process engaged in which the courts could determine a lesser consequence than the 2 year or the $4,000 fine. So in the language of the bill, it is modified from the original version that retains the 2 year penalty or $4,000 fine, but it allows the court to lower that penalty, but not to less than 1 year. So in summary then, what this bill does is adds the Minnesota Security Hospital to language already in this statute and then imposes a 2 year or $4,000 fine on persons who are at that hospital that inflict serious bodily harm on the employees who are there. This is to address that very small group of people who are determined to be able to be fully conscious, fully responsible, and volitionally engaging in harming other people. And with that, I hope for your support.
Are there any questions on Senate File 1120? Any discussion? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, would Senator Sharon just yield for a question? I need some clarification.
Senator Sharon will yield. Senator Senjum.
Senator Sharon, help me a little bit, because we had a lot of discussion the other day about mental illness, what it is, how people certainly perhaps react when they're mentally ill. And it seems to me, just on surface, and there must be something deeper in your bill that I'm not understanding, but we're suggesting that people that are incarcerated because, well, at least not necessarily incarcerated, but in custody because they're mentally ill, now when they act out their mental illness, they're going to be criminals. Is that, I mean, that's the sense I get out of your bill, and I just can't get there. I can accept mental illness as an illness, as opposed to, if you will, a criminal act. So, Senator Sharon, if you could just help me through that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. And thank you for the question, because you are exactly thinking in the way that I am as a person who comes out of the mental health field, that when we start talking about imposing a felony on persons who have by law been civilly committed to an institution because they are mentally ill while engaging in a crime, or they might be, by the court, sent to the same facility for competency restoration. So why would you create a felony on an assault by a person who already is there because they've been determined to be mentally ill and dangerous? So what we are learning in the process of the hospital at security is that a number of people are referred to the court, referred by the court there, and that they are referred under those criteria or for competency restoration. But in the course of working with those clients, it's determined, it's discovered, as you read in Commissioner Jessen's letter, that there are persons who are are not acting out of psychosis, are not acting out of mental illness when they're engaged in this assaultive behavior. It's volitional. It's rational. It's planned. You can read those stories in the letters that are in front of you by the guards about the conversations that they have with the patients about how some of the patients there plan these activities, assault these persons, create serious bodily harm to the persons who are employed there, and then afterwards taunt the people who work there by the lack of opportunities that those employees have to have any recourse. You know that under all of the changes in the law about the ability of people who work in the security hospital or any psychiatric institution, there's a number of limitations placed on those employees as they deal with violence in the workplace because they're working with vulnerable populations. And those people who are mentally ill are considered vulnerable. But there are instances in this institution when somebody has been referred there that may be inappropriately referred. This offers an opportunity for the employee and for the hospital itself to report a crime to local law enforcement and then to the county attorney, and uses the similar process that's used at MSOP or at Anoka. And that is in which there will be a review, there will be a reconsideration. There has to be evidence to indicate that this did not occur in the course of mental illness, but was a volitional act. The county attorney can continue, as they do under the current process, to ask for a Rule 20, determine competency as it relates to this specific act. And so all of those processes and procedures remain in place for the person that's being charged with the crime, as well as the local law enforcement and the county attorney's office, to simply focus this on that rare instance, which is about one, maybe one person a year, that would fit the criteria for having committed a crime volitionally.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, as I was looking over this bill in Judiciary Committee, I did ask the question about how the Department of Corrections would feel about having these patients now be installed in some of their facilities. Question came up that, from my own experience, is that those who are mentally ill make a very, very poor prisoner when it comes to a Department of Corrections. Oftentimes they're either the abuser or they become the abused in our correction facility. And that's why I caution us to go forward with this bill. I would imagine that anyone working in a mental health facility or a state hospital, such as we have in St. Peter, understand that they don't always get the most pleasant circumstances to work in, that they oftentimes will at least face the possibility that there may be unpleasant or potentially dangerous activities with the clientele that they have to serve. But at the very same time, I know that they have the facilities and the resources in order to contain and to handle those individuals. Correction facility personnel are a little different. They're under the court order to turn a key at the request of a court order, and that they try to be as facilitating as they can in trying to understand their inmate population, but at the very same time, they are not the same type of personnel that you find in a state hospital. They are not equipped to handle that type of a patient. And like I said in my opening comments, this type of population in a prison population, either they become abusers or they become the abused. I do not think it's wise to put these individuals in a Department of Corrections facility.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and thank you very much for those comments of concern. You know, we have two situations here in which we have, you know, patients and staff or inmates and staff that are vulnerable to the violent actions of other people, and those are of high concern to us. But because of Senator Limmer's expressed concern during the hearings in Judiciary about the fact that the Department of Corrections had not been at the table, that I did follow up on that and ask for some feedback from the Department of Corrections on their position on this. And at first we were trying to figure out whether or not they would be concerned about fiscal issues, but in the end they indicated that they did not have issues with us moving forward in this bill, with this bill.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I would ask members to think about the population we're talking about. These are people that have already been through the criminal justice system or the civil justice system. They've been evaluated by licensed psychologists and experienced evaluators and have found to have become a danger to themselves or others, suffering from mental illness. We do not criminalize mental illness in the state of Minnesota. And what Senator Sharon is talking about are symptomatic behaviors of mental illness. She's talked about the intervention of volition, that maybe this particular instance wasn't an act of the mental illness or a symptom of the mental illness. But I think she's missing the point. These people are now in facilities due to an evaluation and a diagnosis of severe mental illness. And the most important fact hasn't been mentioned here, ladies and gentlemen, which is the fact that the county attorneys can already charge these folks for assault. They already have the authorization they need to charge, and if it was a volitional act, these folks can be sentenced accordingly. But please remember this population. They are diagnosed mentally ill. They're diagnosed as dangerous to themselves and others. I have to think that the jobs that our employees perform in these facilities must be the hardest imaginable. And so I am also concerned about these folks. But they know when they accept these jobs that they are working with the mentally ill. It's not just in this facility. It's in our jails. It's in our correctional facilities. It's in every hospital. It's in many clinics across the state. And I am so grateful to the people that work in our healthcare facilities that are willing to take on these very difficult jobs. But that doesn't mean that we need an enhanced penalty for one of these patients in one of these facilities for this kind of behavior. There are already criminal charges available, and there are already penalties in our criminal justice system for volitional acts.
Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, I agree that some of the conduct here would be the product of the mental illness, but the testimony that we heard in the Judiciary Committee was that some of this conduct is knowing, intelligent, planned, and bragged about afterward. That even though some of the folks who are mentally ill and dangerous in our system do not have the capacity to think ahead and to plan these kind of acts, they're impulsive acts without any planning. We also know that some of the folks who are in these facilities talk about it ahead of time. They taunt the staff, telling the staff that we're going to get you and there's nothing you can do about it. After they assault the staff, they brag about it afterwards, knowing there's nothing that can be done about it, because there aren't the physical facilities at St. Peter to segregate the patients in a way that would prevent them from harming the staff or other patients. You know, in some of our prison systems, in some of the prisons, there are actually ways to have no staff contact whatsoever with some of the prisoners. You can open the doors and close the doors remotely and allow the inmates to go from place to place, thereby not causing the staff any risk of harm. We don't have any of these kind of segregation units, if you will, in the state hospital system. So there really is very little recourse right now. And unfortunately, there are times, even with a regular assault charge, that the judge feels the inability to sentence someone outside of the facility they're already in because they are committed to that facility. Well, this statute would specifically authorize and indeed require that a person who has committed one of these offenses, if in fact they're convicted, and it would still be the same standard of proof, burden of proof, beyond a reasonable doubt, that they intentionally committed this act, knowingly, not a product of mental illness. You probably have a McNaughton defense raised in all of these cases. If they can get to the point of a conviction, then the judge would have to sentence someone to the prison facility, where at least they would be prevented from harming other inmates and the staff. This is not anywhere near a perfect solution, and it would be a rare case, I think, where the county attorney would use this tool to actually prosecute someone, because they know that they have to overcome the legal hurdles to getting a conviction. But it would also send a very powerful message to the patients in the facilities that if you plan something out, taunt the staff, commit the act, brag about it afterwards, that there's a very real possibility that you're going to be convicted of a new felony crime and you're going to be removed from this facility and sent back to state prison. In other words, there will be consequences for their actions. And the consequences, just the tools, are just not available right now in any other way in the state hospital facilities to do that. So I think on balance, this bill is one that is worth making state law, and I encourage you to support it.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. I think Senator Latz took most of my words. So I'll just add this. I believe that our number one responsibility with our state employees, especially those at correctional-type institutions or mental health institutions, is to protect them. And I think there are facilities that can handle the violent. These facilities are not set up that way. And the employees don't go into those facilities expecting to get harmed or assaulted and to say, well, you better just suck it up. That's not what they're there to do, and I think we need to protect them. I think this bill would help to do that. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, no one wants our employees to be injured, but again, we're talking about folks that have been diagnosed as mentally ill, and if there's another charge by a county attorney, which they already have the authorization to do, it would be only with the expectation that there would be further evaluations. Again, most likely these people will end up right back in the same facility that they were in because they won't be competent to stand the new criminal charges. But as I said, the county attorneys already have the ability to charge, and our judges also already have the ability to determine where someone will be housed under a sentence.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sharon yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. And Sharon, I see your letter here from Commissioner Jessen. I would have liked to have seen a letter myself personally from Commissioner Roy from the Department of Corrections. Madam President and Senator Sharon, is it your position that Commissioner Roy supports this legislation?
Senator Sharon.
I wasn't sure if you asked me directly if the commissioner had told me directly this, but we did review this through the liaisons and the representatives, and they indicated that they were not opposed, that they were neutral on the bill. So that we were very deliberate about seeking that information because of Senator Limmer's asking that question during the committee process.
Senator Peterson.
I had it in writing as well. I'm sorry.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sharon continue to yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
Madam President, Senator Sharon, you know, I have the privilege of serving a number of correctional officers, quite frankly, in St. Cloud, in Minnesota's first and oldest prison, as far as I know, in the state, and have a number of those officers that I serve. I see, and there, as members know, they're a member of AFSCME, and I see you have a letter here from AFSCME as well, but did you have any correctional officers testify in favor or against this bill at all?
Senator Sharon.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Madam President, Senator Sharon, who from AFSCME testified in favor of this bill, or is it just primarily the letter here from Mr. Snide?
Senator Sharon.
The name of the person that represented AFSCME was Tim Headley.
Madam President, Senator Sharon, did he reference any feelings of the correctional officers in regards to this issue?
Senator Sharon.
No.
Well, Madam
Senator
President, members, I hope that creates some significant concern for you. Number one, members, we do not have a letter of support from the commissioner relating to the Department of Corrections, Commissioner Roy. Members, we do not have the support of the correctional officers. There is no doubt everyone in this chamber is sensitive to this issue and certainly more sensitive to the people that have to handle these residents of the state, quite frankly, in terms of their behavior and their illness. But members, to simply transfer this issue from one facility to a number of facilities around the state where I'm not sure the correctional officers, I would have to do some more research on that myself, whether they're actually trained to handle these incidents and these residents that have these mental illness challenges and behavior members, quite frankly, I have grave concerns and would ask you to consider those things. I would have liked to have seen another letter from the commissioner that's going to take on this responsibility. And boy, members, we really ought to have the same letter of support from the correctional officers who are going to be asked to handle this situation.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I do share the same concerns that Senator some of the other senators have shared. Last week, we moved some money in to increase the number of hospital beds for the mentally ill because we were concerned about them being in jail and not getting the proper attention that they need. And I supported that bill, and I think that that is an issue. Today, in a different sense, we're taking the mentally ill patients and incarcerating them in jails of the general population. I think that's an issue. And as Senator Peterson alluded to, I certainly have some concerns if these people be properly cared for. But I think, actually, when I start thinking about this, it goes further than that. I start to wonder, as Senator Latz talked about, some of these people have their full faculties and they're doing this on purpose, knowingly and willingly, and they're challenging the staff on their own accord. So then I start to wonder, when we look at our sentencing guidelines, should some of these people have been there in the first place? And I think maybe the issue goes a lot deeper than what we're just talking about today. And if that's not the case, I get very concerned that we're going to take people that are mentally ill, and some of this, some of these things that are happening because of the fact they are mentally ill, and now we're going to say, let's put them in a general prison population. I have a lot of concern about that.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. And I did support this bill in judiciary, but I've since done some deep thinking on it, and I've got some real issues with it. I think what we've heard here is that we don't have what we need at St. Peter to take care of these the people that become violent like that. Well, I think that's the place that we need to correct it. If we don't have segregation, we need to get segregation back. Once at St. Peter, they had that. St. Peter is under a provisional license because they haven't been doing treatment as they're supposed to be doing and because of a number of other things, because of staffing issues and so forth. And while I have total sympathy for and respect for the staff that works at St. Peter, I also have sympathy and respect for the people that work in our state prisons, and they are not equipped to handle people with mental illness. The one place that should do this with this particular population is St. Peter, and I think we need to do a number of things with St. Peter to make sure that they are able to handle people in this kind of a situation. Once again, it'll be going back to criminalizing people with a mental illness, and although some of them may know what they're doing, they're still ill and they're not getting the treatment they needed, and they're not able to, we don't have the staff trained in the facility the way we need them trained to deal with them, and I think that's the problem. So I think we need to fix St. Peter rather than to start putting more people in prison.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. This is certainly a worthy conversation, and I appreciate this. I would like to oppose a call of the Senate for the remainder of this bill.
Senate is under call.
Sentences. Stop the call of the Senate.
Senator Sharon.
I move that the proceedings
under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant be directed to bring in the absent members.
Thank you very
much. On
that
motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant will bring in the absent members. Senator Sharon, did you want to? I have a few more people who want to speak, but
yes, go ahead. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate this important conversation, and to reassure the members of the Senate who are here and going to be voting on this, that not only I want to respect the fact that there isn't a letter here specifically, but that the question about the Department of Corrections and their position was discussed with them specifically because of Senator Limmer's concerns, and their position was communicated to me, and to the degree that you can accept that I would not communicate something other than the facts of that, you can be sure that they're neutral on this, along with the NAMI, the National Association on Mental Illness, those representatives who also share with me concerns about reasonable and fair treatment of the mentally ill. So I just want you to know that this is a provision that already is applied to those people who work in the corrections division, in corrections as well as at Moose Lake. They already, and MSOP, which is a part of the security hospital campus. So this is not something new. This is simply expanding it to the employees at the security hospital to rarely be used in that very narrow circumstance when, as a result of a number of procedures, it's determined that the person is, in fact, acting rationally in this act. The important thing to remember is that in the care of persons who are mentally ill, that there's a very different set of interventions for persons who are psychotic, and why we would be very concerned about holding psychotic persons to being responsive to such things as punishment. And in punishment in the psychiatric setting oftentimes has withdrawal of privileges or withdrawal of certain access to the television set, so that somehow the idea is that if the person has a consequence, that it would modify the behavior. That's a behavior modification concept, and it's not a useful concept in relationship to persons who are not able to take in that information and apply it to the circumstance. This situation that we're describing, where information is given to a person that there is a serious consequence to an action, would have an impact. So if it is not going to be applied to anybody that's in that circumstance that we all share concerns about. It's only applied to the person who is able to plan willfully and engages in a behavior that they know ahead of time that there is no potential from them to experience any consequence and engage in that very sociopathic behavior for their own personal entertainment and pleasure in an environment where the staff and the other patients have little recourse. I am urging your support for this bill.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, just a response to Senator Peterson on the correctional department. I did talk to the correctional department after the judicial committee and asked them if they were opposed, and they said they had no problem with anybody coming into their facilities. And remember, NAMI is not opposed to this. So those of you that are concerned, you would think that NAMI would be opposed if they thought it was harmful to those that we should be protecting. So here we have clients, if we call them, that are incarcerated in MSOP, and they've got a problem. And they get help for that problem, and there's a period when they know what they're doing, and they are in their right mind. They may be on a drug or something, but they're in their right mind, and they then decide to hurt somebody, but they don't have to be accountable for that. And I think they need to be accountable for that. And I think this measure would make them understand that, and we would have less violent interruptions. So we rest our case.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, would Senator Sharon yield for a question?
Senator Sharon will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sharon, in the event that a patient that's being held in our MSOP program These are the most dangerous of our sex offenders that are civilly committed. If they would happen to throw a bottle of substance, some bodily fluid, in the face of a worker down at St. Peter, does that mean that that individual could possibly end up in the general population of our correction facility? That's the question I'd like to ask you.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Senator Latz to confirm what I'm saying to be true, but under current law, the answer to your question is yes, that a patient that is currently civilly committed to the Minnesota Sex Offenders Program, if they engage in behavior that is of significant bodily harm, or if they throw bodily fluids, or it's bodily fluids, on an employee, they are potentially charged with fourth-degree assault. And I would just ask Senator Latz to confirm that if I'm wrong, or to dissuade me from that if I'm wrong.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I believe that's correct under current law. This bill does not change current law with regard to the sex offender program. It applies the same standard that currently applies to the sex offender program to those who are committed mentally ill and dangerous at St. Peter. So the bill before you makes no changes whatsoever to the sex offender program. It applies only to those who are committed MIND to the St. Peter facility, but a different part of the facility than MSOP is housed in.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I don't know if too many of our members have ever been at St. Peter to visit the MSOP program. I visited along with other members of the legislative body in both chambers. We were the first legislators to show up after 20 years of it being formed. We seem to have been a little neglectful of that operation, but nevertheless, the thing that I'm trying to explain is that the MSOP program is actually a maximum security facility. It looks like a prison. It has the same concertina wire on top of the fenced enclosure around a secure building. It has gates inside from one area to another in order to control population. The thing that I'm getting at is that it's a very, very secure facility, and yet at the very same time, one could be spat upon, and all of a sudden now we have a facility that that individual may be removed from to put into a correction facility somewhere else in the state of Minnesota. I find it, and then the other management issue that could come from that is now you have a patient there that may be populating another population center, not quite so civilly committed facility, but one that's of general population for a prison population. And so the question is again, is this the type of individual that you want to have in a general prison population? It makes it very difficult for prison management. It makes it very difficult for cell block life, not only for the personnel, but for the population in general. I would imagine that that individual might even be in danger of their own life if they acted up a little too much in that population. So I think I agree with Senator Goodwin. I think I would rather help improve and facilitate the operation at St. Peter than rather move the population of a few members, let's face it, it's going to be a few, to a general prison population.
Senator Kiffmeyer. I'm sorry, Senator Kiffmeyer, did you pass? Oh, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. So, members, we have a very difficult situation in front of us. Without question, those who choose to serve and to take a job in a facility like this know full well what they're going into. This is not a surprise to someone who takes a job in a facility like this. It is unique. But it's also unique. There are people that come in with traumatic brain injuries in the emergency room, many times very upset. and acting out because of the brain pressure. They also have other cases. We have many public service people who take those jobs are put in this position many times, Madam President, in which they have very difficult situations to handle. The requirement of the system is to train them on how to respond. The challenge I have here is I've worked in psychiatric care, both as a student and after I graduated. And so I recognize it is a very unique field, but they do have training for it, and there should be that. This facility also is receiving some major upgrades on structure and design that came through capital investment through bonding that is going to make a big difference in their ability to care for this kind of a patient. But I also want to clarify, because of my strong feeling, that a statement was made that the primary job in these facilities is to take care of the employee. I respectfully disagree. Your main job is to take care of the patient. Your main job is to take care of them and look out for them. You are hired to do that. So what do you do when you have a situation like this? You must have consequences. But I take a look at this and say, to put them in jail, to put them in the prison population, to go through that, to me that is going beyond the whole definition of a mentally ill person. When you have a situation like this and you have an assault, there's also current law that every county attorney and every facility already has to deal with this. And so I do not see this as necessary. I don't see this as part of the fulfillment of the mission of a particular hospital like this. And so I have real concerns about implementing or making this kind of change in law. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Latz.
Madam President, just to clarify a few points. We already have this protection that this bill is seeking to apply in place for the staff who knowingly take jobs that are somewhat risky when they go to serve the population, the Minnesota sex offender population. We already have this in effect. If someone assaults a police officer, just by definition, could be a misdemeanor assault in other circumstances, becomes a felony fourth degree assault if you assault a police fighter or a firefighter, or I believe an emergency response personnel as well. So there is an important difference because if it is in fact a tool available right now to prosecute a fifth degree misdemeanor assault against someone, the remedy, if they are convicted as a misdemeanor, is the county workhouse, facilities which are typically not as well set up to handle violent offenders or persons that have a combination of violence and mental illness components, even if the crime they committed was not a product of their mental illness. In some ways, they'd be better served and better protected in a state prison, which is what would happen if there's a conviction for a felony under this bill, a fourth degree felony assault. I also want to clarify what the procedure would be, because this wouldn't just happen automatically. And I alluded to this earlier, but a criminal defendant has the right to demand a Rule 20.02 evaluation. That is an independent evaluation to determine whether or not they were capable of forming the intent to commit the crime and know and understand that what they were doing was unlawful. And I would suspect if this crime were charged out in a facility like this, every defendant would raise that issue and would go through that evaluation. And a judge would ultimately make a determination whether or not the matter could even proceed to trial. Or if it proceeded to trial and they were found guilty, whether that finding of guilt should be negated because they were mentally ill as the cause of the offense. So that protection is already there in the system. We should not assume, as a matter of overall practice and broad statute, that everyone who assaults a staff person is doing so without understanding that it's wrong, without being able to think ahead of time about it, and without being able to control their impulses. On the contrary, there may be those one or two cases where that's not the situation. Maybe it's because they're on their medications and their mental illness is under control, and they're thinking quite clearly that they have a vendetta against a particular staff person who withdrew their privileges to watch TV last week. And these things actually happen, members. So the procedural protections are in place to buffer between those whose conduct is a product of their mental illness and they don't understand what's wrong, and those who are capable of planning and assaulting a staff person. And our state workers should not be subject to those kinds of situations. And by the way, they wouldn't necessarily just be dropped into the general population at the state prison. The state prison has a number of different kinds of facilities and levels of oversight and protection in which particular needs of inmates go into certain areas where they can be best protected themselves from other inmates and where the staff can be best protected as well, subject to the level of concern. And there are a lot of violent offenders and, frankly, a lot of offenders with mental illness in the state prison system, so they know how to handle these kind of situations if someone were to end up there for a year.
Is there any more discussion on Senate File 1120? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1120, a bill for an act relating to public safety, expanding fourth-degree assault protections to employees supervising and working directly with mentally ill and dangerous patients.
No further discussion. Now the Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 40 ayes and 23 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 57 on general orders, Senate File 1265, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1265 is a consumer protection bill. What it does is it provides consumers the ability to choose an agent to advise and advocate on their behalf when working with a health insurance company. It defines an agent of record, what the agent of record agreement is. It also addresses a concern that came up where health insurance carriers are deciding to stop carrying non-qualified plans and by doing so not paying commission to the agent, even though they would still be responsible for servicing that policy. This language would take care of that issue. The last section requires MNsure to recognize both navigators and agents who have helped Minnesotans enroll in MNsure that for some reason they were not recorded. There were some concerns that have been raised once we passed it out of the Commerce Committee. We tried to address and worked to address their concerns. The House has already taken care of that language, I would like to offer the A1 amendment at this point. Madam President.
Senator Jensen. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Jensen moves to amend Senate File Number 1265 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 1, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. In this amendment, we looked at Section 1, and we needed to clarify that we were not changing any of the current relationships that the agents had with their insurance company. We also had to do some clarification in Section 3 just to make sure that the efficiency and how they would pay the commission would work for the insurance companies and how the timing would also work. The biggest change is in Section 4 that deals with the ability of the consumer to go to MNsure and make sure that they know who helped them enroll, whether it was a navigator or an agent, and that they would have to record that, pass that on to the insurance company so that the insurance company has that. What happens is if you were an agent and helped someone enroll and they came back and the insurance company didn't have you listed as the agent of record, you could not help that person. So this would help solve that problem. We're looking at an 18-month look back that the commission would then be paid to the navigator or the agent because they did do the work and they deserve to have that commission paid. With that, I ask for your support. Oh, there's a sunset on here too, so that the 18-month would only go to August 1st, 2015, and going forward, there would be a 6-month look back. I appreciate your support on this amendment.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1265 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1265, a bill for an act relating to insurance, permitting individuals to contract with an insurance producer to advocate on the individual's behalf.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1265. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 144 on general orders, Senate File 417, Senator Dahl.
Madam President and members, Senate File 417 was brought to me by the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. They had concerns about the need to obtain multiple licenses or certifications. Professional engineers are already required to obtain a license in order to practice engineering, and that license has very strict standards. The concern the engineers have is the fact that state agencies often establish additional license or certifications
that are intended to allow non-engineers to practice a particular type of engineering. In most cases, the knowledge and skills required covered by these licenses or certifications are already covered by the professional engineering license. So, in essence, requiring engineers to obtain these additional licenses is really not necessary. This bill establishes that professional engineering license satisfies the requirements of any state agency or local government to practice engineering and will minimize the number of additional licenses or certifications that engineers need to obtain. However, if a state agency still believes that an additional license or certification is required to protect health, safety, and welfare of the public, they could certainly do that through through rulemaking. I do have the A7 amendment, Madam President.
The Secretary will report the A7 amendment.
Senator Dahl moves to amend Senate file number 417 as follows, page 2, and this is the A7 amendment.
Senator Dahl.
Madam President, this just makes it does not make this retroactive. This will go into effect August 1st of this coming year. So the requirement of license or certifications already beyond the professional engineers would not be required.
Is there any discussion on the A7 amendment? All those in favor of the A7 amendment say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Dahl on the bill.
So, Madam President, members, that is the bill. I would ask for your support on Senate file 417.
Secretary will give Senate file 417 its third reading.
Senate file number 417, a bill for an act relating to professional engineers, clarifying licensing requirements.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 142 on general orders, Senate File 1137, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1137 relates to public safety and the current or recent positions of authority over juveniles when it comes to a criminal sexual conduct situation. In Minnesota, we have 5 degrees of criminal sexual conduct. This bill does not change those. The penalties are serious. This bill does not change those. Each degree has an age factor associated with it when it comes to consent. This bill does not change those. Each degree has a set of factors that must take place for it to fall into that offense. This bill does not change those. What this bill does address and what it does take into consideration is that for crimes of criminal sexual assault in the third and fourth degree, if the victim is 16 and not yet 18, and the offender is in an authoritative position over that victim and uses that position so that the victim will submit, current law only allows a prosecution on those charges if that offense occurs at the time the offender is in the position of authority. And a person that's in a position of authority includes people that the parent or that you turn your child over to, that they're charged with those parental rights, duties, or responsibilities. It includes babysitters, coaches, teachers, someone that is supervising that particular child. What we're asking in this language is that That position of authority, and for you to consider, is that position of authority doesn't just remain only at the time they're in the position. If you have a coach and you believe they are in the, well, they are in the position of authority, and the day after they are no longer your coach, that child doesn't look at that coach as a position of authority. There should be a look back period of 120 days. That's what this bill is asking for, so that there can be a time frame that if there is an issue involving consent, there is a time frame that they must not engage in that kind of activity. So the only thing that's changing is that time frame, and I ask for your support on this bill.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 1137? Seeing no discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 1137 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1137, a bill for an act relating to public safety, expanding criminal sexual conduct offenses for persons in current or recent positions of authority over juveniles.
Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill in special orders is number 61 on general orders, Senate File 1499. Senator Dahl.
Madam President, members, thank you. Of course you don't remember, but last year we passed a bill off this floor 58-0 to allow Cedar Lake Township to dissolve a sewer district because they were hooking up with the city of New Prague. Everyone was fully on board and everything was great. However, the Cedar Lake Sanitary Sewer Improvement District had not filed a necessary document with the Secretary of State's office by the beginning of the legislative session as required by last year's bill. Everything is still ready to go, and matter of fact, hookups are already made, but the Secretary of State's office suggested that we actually change the legislation to make sure that we're not running afoul of any current statutes. So that's it. I do have an amendment, the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Dahl moves to amend Senate File Number 1499 as follows, page 1, line 10, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is just the bill. Actually, we changed the date to make it conform to the House language and actually pushed it back just a little bit further to make sure they had plenty of time at the end of the session to get this done. I ask for your support. Would stand for questions.
Questions on the A1 amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Dahl on the bill? Any more? All right. Any questions on Senate File 1499? Secretary will give Senate File 1499 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1499, a bill for an act relating to local government, extending the time period to file certificate of approval of a special law.
Secretary will take the roll.
All because on this.
All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 23 on general orders, Senate File 694, Senator Herr.
Madam President, thank you. Senate File 694 is a housekeeping bill for St. Paul Port Authority. The St. Paul Port Authority established in 1932 by the legislative body is responsible for business development and brownfield cleanup and job creation in St. Paul. The organization also has working relationship with Ramsey County and the communities beyond its border. Senate File 694 updates provision relating to the work of this organization. The main purpose of this bill allow the Port Authority of the City of St. Paul to also be known as the St. Paul Port Authority. This change would reflect the manner of how everyone has been referring to the organization names for many years, which is St. Paul Port Authority. Section 1 specify what I just talked about regarding DBA, and Section 2 state the determined date for commissioner to begin on August 1st and ends on July 31st for a six-year term. Section 3 prohibits the St. Paul Port Authority from taking lands owned by owned or controlled or used by Ramsey County without consent from the county board. Section 4 clarifies the St. Paul Port Authority has jurisdiction over river, lakes, and abutting park facility within the Port Authority District. Section 5 allows the St. Paul Port Authority to work with other government units. And Section 6, 7, and 8 delete redundancy of the phrase City of St. Paul. But Section 7 insert Ramsey County for clarity. Section 9 take away, six and 9 is a repealer for two Minnesota statute, subdivision 11 and 12. Senators, I also ask for your green votes for this bill, and stand by for any question.
Are there any questions? Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Would the author of the bill yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Herr, Section 9 in your bill repeals a statute, and I believe that repealer repeals the requirement that the City Council consent for issues related to revenue bonds authorized by the Port Authority. So if that's repealed, what authority would consent to issues relating to revenue bonds? Would it be the Port Authority itself or another representative body?
Senator Herr.
Madam President, the revenue bond will be managed by the St. Paul Port Authority.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, thank you. My question would be, before we would have the City Council or an elected body be responsible for approving revenue bonds, but now it's the Port Authority. Is the Port Authority an elected body by the public?
Senator Herr.
Madam Chair, can Senator Limmer, I missed the part of the audio, a little muff, so what's the last part of your questions, please?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is since it's no, if this turns into law, we would be taking the authority of the City Council, that's an elected body, that would approve or consent to revenue bonds, meaning they're responsible to the electorate for making that decision. Now, with if this repealer stays in place and becomes law, now the authority would go to the Port Authority. Is the Port Authority members, are they elected by the people of St. Paul?
Senator Herr.
Madam President, the Port Authority are not an elective entity, but the board that serve on the St. Paul Port Authority are appointed by the mayor of St. Paul. There's our seven board members. There are seven board members. Five of them are appointed by the city, the mayor of St. Paul, and two of them are city council members. So if you want to break down, that's what be what a representative. So it is, it's not an elected body.
Any more discussion? Then the secretary will give Senate File 694 its third reading.
Senate File Number 694, a bill for an act relating to local government, modifying provisions governing the St. Paul Port Authority.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 14 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 135 on general orders, Senate File 986, Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson is not in the chamber. All right, we'll come back. He's right there. Senator Carlson, are you ready to take up your bill? All right, Senator Carlson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have Senate File 986.
Senator Carlson, Madam President.
Madam President, I have Senate File 986.
Yes, go ahead and explain your bill.
Madam President and members, this bill makes changes to the reckless driving and proof and standard in Minnesota law, and it's been something that has been a request for years from our prosecutors who are not able to charge greater than a misdemeanor charge when a person wantonly or willfully disregards the accepted standard for driving and causes a crash that may in some cases do great bodily harm or even kill a victim. Members, we've had a lot of problems with tragedies that are caused by distracted driving, inattentive drivers, rising with the onset of handheld devices. Bad habits that might be practiced while driving, such as eating or grooming, and of course texting. More recently, the handheld cell phone has been identified as a precursor to crashes that could have been avoided if the driver would have avoided the distractions in and outside of the vehicle. Drivers not only know this is dangerous behavior, but they also know that texting while driving is illegal in Minnesota. Senate File 986 redefines reckless driving to a higher prosecution standard requiring proof of consciously disregarding a substantial and unjustifiable risk that driving may result in harm to someone or their property. The risk and disregard involved must constitute a significant deviation from the standard of conduct of what a reasonable person would observe in the situation. The bill also states that a person who violates the statute is guilty of a misdemeanor, but a person who violates the section of law this section of law and causes great bodily harm or death to another is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. If you would look at the bill, Section 1 amends the reckless driving section in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 169 and replaces the current language of reckless driving crime with willful and wanton disregard for safety with language regarding recklessness taken from the Model Penal Code. Taken from the Model Penal Code. It enhances the penalty for a violation of misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor when the violation results in death or great bodily harm to another. Section 2 provides that the state is not prevented from prosecuting or punishing a person for conduct that constitutes a different crime under a different section of law. Section 3 provides that this act is effective August 1st of 2015 and applies to crimes committed on or after that date. Madam Chair and members, each time I've carried this bill, the city attorneys, county attorneys, families, and group, including the motorcycle group, the groups that are classically impacted view these as unjust policies and want them changed. We've written the bill several times, and each time we focused more on the results than we did on the behaviors. We had a major change in our focus in this last appearance before the Judicial Committee and managed to get language that does focus on behaviors. So, Madam Chair, I think that we have a good bill, and I hope that I can count on members' support.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Carlson yield to a question?
He will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Carlson, oftentimes when we make public safety decisions particularly around traffic and moving violations, we do so on the basis of some empirical data that demonstrates that this particular penalty has some correlation to a public safety interest. For example, a DUI threshold, particularly at 0.16, can be scientifically, you know, you can quantify a public safety impact versus 0.08, so on and so forth. Is there any empirical data to demonstrate that this enhanced penalty is in fact attached to a quantifiable public safety benefit?
Senator Carlson.
Madam President and Senator Peterson, quantifiable is probably in the eye of the beholder, because we do have DWI statutes that do have numbers associated with them. It's very difficult to associate a number with a distracted driving. However, the challenge here is with the prosecutor who would have to prove that that the person who has committed this crime is aware of and consciously disregarding a substantial and unjustifiable risk. So that's the standard of proof. It's not numerical. It would be something that would have to be referenced in law and have to be proved as meeting those standards.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Newman.
Madam President, I decided kind of late as to whether or not I would stand up and speak to this bill, and finally decided I would because principally this is a bill that has been around for a long time, usually has come back to us initially requesting an enhancement to a felony. This is an enhancement to a gross misdemeanor, and I always opposed the bill because it always looked at the outcome of a car accident involving ordinary negligence as opposed to the conduct which led up to the car accident. And this bill is a significant difference from those prior bills in this respect. Following the hearing in the Transportation Committee, I asked Senate Counsel to give me a comparison of ordinary negligence and gross negligence as defined in civil law and in criminal law. And it isn't an exact comparison, but what you have in Senator Carlson's bill now is to, in effect, redefine reckless driving and the standard of conduct that is involved in reckless driving, where the penalty involving great bodily injury and death is enhanced to a gross misdemeanor. And I think that the very, very significant legal difference here is that we are now focusing on the conduct and not the outcome of the accident. And I was always against criminalizing ordinary negligence, because everybody that operates a motor vehicle potentially would be then a criminal. But this is a little different, and I would invite you to look at the specific language in the bill on lines 1.9 through 1.14, where it talks in terms of a standard of conduct where an individual is consciously disregarding a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the driving will result in harm to another. That is a much steeper standard of care than ordinary negligence. Then it goes on to say that this constitutes a significant deviation from the ordinary standard of conduct that that a reasonable person would observe. What they're talking about there is, in effect, ordinary negligence. In other words, what makes this difference is that the standard of conduct is a significant deviation from ordinary negligence. And therefore, members, because we are now concentrating on the conduct rather than the outcome of an automobile accident, I do finally, after a lot of years, rise in support of this bill. Madam President.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to say a couple of more words about this particular bill and the families that have been contacting me, contacting my county attorney, Jim Backstrom, and contacting all of those folks that have been very helpful in getting this done. And I sincerely appreciate Senator Newman's advice on this and his tenacity in getting the language right, because it does make a difference. So after many years, we have finally gotten a bill that we can hang our hat on. And we also have a lot of families that are going to be thanking the members should this be turned into law. And just so you know, this is a major issue with our county attorney. We have 21 people since 2006 who have died because of distracted driving of some sort. And I would like to name some of those people. Jacqueline Devney, 18, of Farmington. Bill Wallace, 58, of Farmington. Brittany Beth Carlson, 30, of Zumbrota. Brandon Carlson, age 2, her son. Tamaya Phillips, age 4, Minneapolis. Deborah Ann Booman, age 34, Lakeville. Shirley Ann Iverson, age 71, Lakeville. Alex Rose Iverson, age 8, Lakeville. Richard Bray, age 40, Belle Plain. Ricky Ball, age 62, Lakeville. Shirley Younger, age 53, Faribault. Craig Carlson, age 47, Ramsey. Ron Rajakowski, age 44, St. Joseph. Sandra Brolin, age 68, Lakeville. Inicio Munoz Gutierrez, age 26, of Farmington. Angela Ware, age 32, Minneapolis. Na Hua, age 48, St. Paul. La Yin, age 48, St. Paul. Michael Goodgame, age 20, Connecticut. James Adams, age 20, of St. Paul. Paxton Harview, age 21, of Stillwater. All of these people died in Dakota County. And I want to especially add Philip Lavalle, Sharia Dixit, and David John Riggs to this list. So thank you, Madam President and members, I urge your support.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, just a few comments, and I apologize to Senator Carlson for him making, I think, concluding comments. But, Madam President, just a question to Senator Carlson on this, if I could.
Senator Carlson will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Carlson, I'm listening to Senator Newman's comments. I think this new language probably moves in a better direction that more members might be comfortable with. One little issue that comes up, and Senator Carlson, I know you sit in Transportation Committee, and we actually amended one of the bills this year to clarify it, but I just want to play it out or discuss it here, because one of the things that's come up in committee is we've talked a lot about the texting and the enhanced penalty, but one of the features that many, many people use in this technological age is a GPS system, whether it's on their phone or a separate device. And I'm just interested in your perspective. We have brought forth language in the transportation bill this year to clarify that a GPS would be not counted as texting, which, as we reviewed it this year, there was a question in the council's advice was it probably was covered under the current texting law, even though some law enforcement said they didn't necessarily enforce it that way. And so we clarified that. But Senator Carlson, I'm interested in your perspective on that. But for the clarification we send through, if somebody would be looking at a GPS briefly as they're trying to navigate where they're going and one of the tools that they may use, would that be gross negligence under this bill, do you foresee?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you for your question, Senator Westrom. The texting is a separate, that's a separate charge. That is a separate act, and texting is illegal. However, you're right, we do have use of a cell phone, meaning making a call, and also the GPS, meaning probably putting in your coordinates, that is legal at this point, where it does not include the texting. Now, that is going to be a little different part of law, and I think that what differentiates those acts with this particular bill is we're looking for something that is a wanton disregard of safety. So, for instance, if you would be totally immersed in your GPS system, I suspect there's a, you know, and you would be the cause of a crash that would injure someone, there potentially could be some application of this onto that kind of act. It's the same thing as if you were doing something, some kind of grooming, for instance, and that's not against the law, but if you were doing something that would take your mind and attention off the road in a wanton way, and it could be proved by a prosecutor, I would suspect that this probably could apply.
Senator Westrom.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Carlson. Thanks for that clarification, and I guess that's where I appreciate Senator Newman's distinction here as well about looking at the conduct as well as the outcome. And so, Senator Carlson, I hear what you're saying. You know, the use of a GPS, a brief look if you're making sure you're going in the right lane or turning at the right spot is reasonable. But if you're immersed in that or eating a cheeseburger or grabbing CDs from the floor, I can that's the type of conduct that I think starts raising to this level or higher level of wanton disregard. And so I think it's good to have that distinction on the record here and just for all of us to think about as we contemplate raising the penalty of reckless driving or the threat of having this be the citation now if you do have an accident. Because most of the time we're talking an accident here. Whether somebody should have paid more attention or not, accidents happen all the time, as you know, and there's usually some negligence in most of those cases, whether it's looking at deer or some distraction, an animal on the side of the road, or other things that are part of life. But as I understand it from your explanation, you know, that is still giving the drivers benefits of the doubt of reasonableness. But I appreciate your explanation, Senator Carlson and Senator Newman.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 980. Oh. Secretary will give Senate File 986 its third reading.
Senate File Number 986, a bill for an act relating to public safety, revising the definition of reckless driving and enhancing penalties.
Now the Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes and 19 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 46 on general orders, Senate File 1219, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1219, members, is the Board of Pharmacy Bill, one of four. It deals with the controlled substance schedules, expansions, and modifications. Basically, it proposes changes to the Minnesota schedules of controlled substance. Drugs that are placed in these schedules have the potential for abuse and addiction. There's two major changes. One changes the alignment of Minnesota's controlled substance schedules 2 through 5 that are Minnesota's and aligns them with the federal schedules 2 through 5. The DEA has added drugs to the federal schedules 2 through 5 that has not been added to the state's controlled substance schedules. These drugs are considered to have legitimate medical uses, but also the potential for high abuse. Most notable, the addition of tramadol to Schedule 4 and the movement of hydrocodone-containing products such as Vicodin from Schedule 3 to Schedule 2. These changes have no impact on healthcare practitioners because they are required to follow the federal schedules when prescribing and dispensing controlled substances. The second major change that it adds certain synthetic drugs to Schedule 1, and even though members, there's reports indicate the abuse of synthetic cannabinoids, stimulant, and hallucinogenic drugs may be declining, they still remain a problem in Minnesota. And actually, we suffered, Senator Sharon and I in our district, a tragic death just last year. There are fewer retail establishments in the state selling these drugs. They're still offered for sale over the internet. and these drugs are still highly have a high potential for abuse with no legitimate medical use. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the law enforcement agencies, and county prosecutors have provided the Board of Pharmacy with information about the synthetic drugs addressed in this bill. And many of them are seized in criminal investigations. The addition of substances to Schedule 1 make the sale and possession of the substance illegal. And in the case of stimulants and hallucinogens, sale and possessions are felonies. And in the case of synthetic cannabinoids, sale is a gross misdemeanor or a felony, while possession is a misdemeanor. What the bill does not do is give the Board of Pharmacy increased authority. Madam Chair and members, with that, I stand for questions. I ask for your support.
Are there any questions? Discussion? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I'd like to thank Senator Rosen for her good work on this bill. Synthetic drugs is a very serious issue in a lot of the communities throughout the state of Minnesota, and we've been working very closely with our public officials, public safety officials, to help address this very serious concern. And members, in talking with some of our local law enforcement, in many cases, these synthetic drugs are just as bad, if not worse, than some of the more mainstream drugs that we're used to hearing about. So, Senator Rosen, thank you for your work. And it doesn't end here. Synthetic drugs is still a huge problem, but this is certainly a step in the right direction.
Any more discussion on Senate File 1219? Secretary will give Senate File 1219 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1219, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying the schedules of controlled substances.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 77 on general orders, Senate File 1215. Senator Marty.
Madam President, members, Senate File 1215 deals with 10 flame retardant chemicals. Flame retardants have been added to upholstery and certain other products in the last 40 years with the theory that they will make housing and other places safer for people and easier to escape fires. But what's come clear in the last 4 decades is, first of all, it doesn't significantly increase your ability to escape a fire. It does very little to give you more time to escape. Unfortunately, while it doesn't have the beneficial effect that was hoped for, it does have serious other consequences. At least these 10 substances do, and they produce fires that have twice the smoke, about 40 times the soot. And the firefighters, this bill is strongly supported by Minnesota firefighters because cancer is now the number one cause of firefighter deaths, more than those caused by fire, smoke inhalation, heart attacks, accidents on the way to fires, everything else combined. 56% of firefighter active duty deaths are caused by cancers now, and there's strong links between a number of these chemicals and that. So this legislation would simply
remove 10 of these chemicals from children's products, toys, and so on, upholstered residential furniture and residential textiles a couple years from now. The industry is beginning to phase them out. Basically, the only people who seem to support putting this in are the manufacturers of the chemicals. Again, the upholstery industry and others have been phasing them out. This only does it bans it for 10 chemicals here. I urge your support and be happy to stand for questions.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Marty yield?
Senator Marty will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Senator Marty, the general direction I think is correct, that people are moving that direction perhaps a little bit slower than what you would like. You and I have talked about this a little bit. Sometimes I think you move too fast and you think I maybe move a little too slow. But I do have a couple of questions in particular related to the bill. I think there are only two of the chemicals, the flame retardants, that are already on the Department of Health priority chemical list. So why did you add 10? What was the reasoning behind that?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Gazelka, good question. And these were, I think there are many times as many chemicals that can be used in flame retardants, but these are the ones that have been most at risk from the studies, the health studies that have been done. They're dangerous just being in the products. When you have children playing with toys that contain this and so on, it's a slight risk from that. Many things have a slight risk. The real concern here is they get even much more dangerous when they're burning. But this is an attempt to not list all the chemicals, but list the ones that are most at risk. I'm not the scientist. I'm just telling you what the scientists are saying are the most dangerous of the chemicals.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Marty yield for one more question?
He will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Kind of along those lines, I think there's no other state that regulates more than just a few. And so 10 is one part of it. But then the second part, I see on the bill on line 2.1, the amounts that are regulated are greater than 100 parts per million, and I don't think any state is even 10 times that amount, and so I'm just wondering what your thinking was on that.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Gazelka, as I mentioned to you, the House version of the bill has a different number, and I'm happy to accept their number. The issue in this these type of chemicals, it's not like they're putting in a couple of drops of this in a big couch or something. They're using significant amounts of it. And so, as I told you, I'm happy to accept what the House language is on that.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Senator Martin. Madam President, I'm not sure how I'll vote, but I see the direction why you want to go the way you do. I just felt it was maybe a little bit aggressive.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I stand in strong support of this bill. Actually, I was able to hear the bill twice in Senator Marty's committee and Senator Sharon's committee. And it is something that I feel that it's the least we can do for our firefighters. They put their life on the line for us every single day. And especially in Greater Minnesota, we have volunteers out there that are working to save us and to protect us on a daily, hourly basis. So whatever we can do to protect our firefighters is something that we need as our responsibility. And members, just I want to point out to the handout that Senator Marty gave us, 56% of all career firefighter line of duty deaths in 2013 were from job-related cancers. And something from the testimony that really stuck out with me is when the body warms up in a fire, it absorbs these toxins. So these firefighters are going into a dangerous situation every single time they are called. And I think that this is something that we need to move forward. It may be a little difficult, but I think it's a responsible thing to do.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, would like to encourage support for this. I think this just passes the reasonable test. I looked at fire sprinklers and tried to say, it just doesn't pass the test for me. But this is really easy. If this is going to affect our firefighters on a day-to-day issue, which it does, I think we need to protect them, and I urge your support.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Marty yield for a question?
Senator Marty will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty, can you tell me, maybe this question has been asked. I stepped out of the room real quickly, but maybe a couple of questions, if you would. Are any of the flame retardants on the Department of Health priority chemical list, and is the federal government undergoing review of these chemicals, Senator Marty?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I believe from one of the previous questions that two of the chemicals must be on the Health Department priorities list. I did not know that, which ones are. These were all chemicals that have been cited in a number of scientific studies with concerns about this. Whether the federal government's reviewing them or not, I will predict that these 10 chemicals will be prohibited and will be removed from upholstery and so on in the near future. Again, I have a feeling at some point there may be more chemicals added to the list, but this bill only deals with 10 that we know are significant concern.
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty just indicated he was interested in amending to the House language. I would therefore make an oral amendment on line 2.1, strike 100 and insert 1,000.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, I don't think it's necessary, but I don't oppose the amendment, so we'll take it as a friendly amendment.
The Secretary will report the oral amendment.
Senator Osmick moves to amend Senate File Number 1215 as follows. Page 2, line 1, delete 100 and insert 1,000.
Is there any discussion on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, would Senator Marty yield for a question?
Senator Marty will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Marty, in your opening comments, you talked about how a lot of these fire retardants were policies that were attempting to help minimize the risk of fire in certain products, et cetera, and offices, homes, places. Can you expand on that? What types of policies have led to these fire retardants, if you could?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, I could go into a long story about that, but I won't. But it was something that I think a lot of firefighters and others were hoping would help make places safer, and it's become clear in the years since that they don't. They make them more dangerous.
Senator Westrom.
So, Madam President, Senator Marty, is some of that government imposed requirements on these products, or is it just products that are being used in the private sector by this manufacturer or that manufacturer, and they use that as a way to try to sell their product as a superior product over their competition, or where does some of this come from?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, Minnesota had never banned the substances, had never required the substances to be added. Some states did, and I think the issue here is, as you mentioned, some places decided, well, we can market these as safer because they're fire resistant or whatever. But in reality, I think that if Minnesota and a couple other states start restricting these, I can picture the marketing will quickly change to these are free from fire retardant chemicals. I will guess the marketing will be changing in the next few years, which is one of the reasons I'm hopeful that our law will help lead to a total change in what they're selling, because it is not making our products safer. It's making them more dangerous.
Senator Westrom.
Well, Madam President, Senator Marty, when you say more dangerous, if you would yield, what is more dangerous, that the products would have burned up just as fast with those fire retardants on them, or without that fire retardant now the product won't burn any faster? Can you explain what you mean by more dangerous?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, while they may reduce the heat of the fire or something, they make it far smokier, and I think it's like 40 times as much soot. So the bottom line was it was hope that you'd have more time to escape a fire. The reality is it's insignificant amount of additional time you get to get out, and because of the increased smoke and the more great toxicity of the fire, it's far, far more dangerous, especially to firefighters. It doesn't make anybody, it doesn't make you safer, it makes it more dangerous.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Marty, thank you for that. And Senator Marty, that's a little of the reason I ask you the questions is we often sit here and try to make a decision on regulating something or banning something or promoting something. And so I'm cautious in actually banning some of these products which are purported to and have been used to slow down or retard fires to make our homes or properties safer. And so obviously a committee has looked at this, but I'm always concerned about knee-jerk reactions, or in 10 years things will change, the science will change. Obviously these products were used for a long time, and we all believe they were fire retardant, and it seems like we could be over swinging the other way, and all of a sudden products won't be as safe, and in fact a fire could accelerate faster. And so that's my concern with 10 on this list. Last question, Senator Marty. Is this bill identical to the House bill now, or what would be the differences from this bill than what's being pushed through or passed through the House of Representatives? Will there be a conference committee? Could you elaborate on any differences, if there is?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, first I want to mention there are, I believe, over 600 studies now talking about the dangers of this, and it does not retard fires. It does not make things safer. The firefighters they said how it was almost ironic to have firefighters coming in and saying we ought to remove these flame retardants. But the reality is that they're trying to make life safer. And in terms of the differences between the House and Senate bill, as far as I know, Representative Howe, the House author, and I have talked, I think they took all of our changes in the bill, and the one that Senator Gazelka had asked about and we just amended into this bill, I think makes the bill, I'm guessing, I'm not sure, I think they're probably identical now.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam President. I have another oral amendment. In order to make them exactly compatible, line 2.18, there's another 100 that need to be stricken to make it 1,000. So I would make that oral amendment on line 2.18.
Secretary will read the oral amendment.
Senator Osmek moves to amend Senate file number 1215 as follows, page 2, line 18, delete 100 and insert 1,000.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Osmek's right. That makes sense to change that along with the other one.
Any more discussion on the oral amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion on the bill? Then the Secretary will give Senate File 1215 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1215, a bill for an act relating to health, prohibiting the use of certain flame retardant chemicals in certain products.
Any more discussion? Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Dahl moved that the following members be excused for a conference committee on House File 2225 at 3 p.m. Senators Dahl, Skoy, Dames. Senator Dibble, for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
Madam President, I rise to a point of order.
State your point.
Madam President, there is a written communication that's been distributed to members of the chamber. It's on our desks, and I believe it violates a number of rules, both in our Senate rules as well as in Mason's. And I would like to call your attention to my belief that these violate the rules and ask that you make that determination. I believe that this letter violates Senate Rule 56.3, which reads that, which has to do with improper conduct that violates accepted norms of Senate behavior. I believe it violates Senate Rule 36.2. which has to do with debate. Granted, this isn't debate, but it's the subject of a debate that we had recently. The member shall speak only to the question under debate and avoid personality. In Mason's, if you look at Section 123, number 1, no person may indulge in personalities, impugn motives of members, or use indecent or profane language. Section 121, number 2, no person may indulge in personalities, impugn motives of members, use indecent or profane language, or participate in conduct that disrupts or disturbs the orderly proceedings of the body. Same section, number 6, the reading in the House of any letter from a person not a member or any other communication calling in question acts of members or officials of the House or being abusive is out of order and should not be permitted. Madam President, I would like you to help us understand whether or not those rules have been violated, and a remedy I would like to request is that these letters be removed from our desks.
Senator Dibble, could you point out the specific sentences that you have concerns with in this letter?
Madam President, I would rather not read them out loud.
Just a paragraph, maybe.
Madam President.
Senator Ortman.
Point of order. Prior to that, can you just identify the letter that's being discussed?
Senator Dibble.
Yes, Madam President, it's the letter. The name at the top of the letter is Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President.
Madam President, if you look to the third paragraph in the body of the letter itself, it would be the fourth paragraph on the front page. The first two sentences. And if you look at the next to the last paragraph on the other, on the flip side, the words of the final words of the first sentence. I believe those impugn motives. I believe the first sentence I called attention to uses indecent language and goes to personality.
Madam President, may I speak to the objection?
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I for one am not offended by this letter in any way. We share constituent letters all the time. And I'm so grateful that one of our members would share the very personal stories of her family's history to better inform this body about these issues. I'm not offended in the least. I'm sorry that Senator Dibble may be offended, but I think this is exactly the kind of information we should be empowered to share. There is a member of this Senate who put her name on this letter to say that she thought we all should have this same information, and I commend her for doing it.
I'm going to rule that I think the point of order is well taken and ask that the pages collect the letters from the floor. Obviously, if members want to keep their letter, they have that option, but the pages are going to go through and ask for the letters. The next bill on general orders is number 94 on special orders, Senate File 1816, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, members, Senate File 1816 is what's called the Uniform Voidable Transactions Act. Members might recall a few weeks ago I had a bill that dealt with probate and trust law. This is a continuation of that. It's a law promulgated through the Bar Association trust section. It's part of the Uniform Laws Commission. It's also it comes to us through the American Bar Association, and in particular the Bankruptcy Law Section of the Minnesota Bar Association. And what it does is it provides some clarifications to what's had been previously called, or if this bill passes, what will be previously called the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, because it doesn't really deal with fraudulent situations. It deals with voidable transactions. So it provides a couple of things. It provides a choice of law depending on what needs clarification. It changes the burden of proof relative to what you do with some of the debtor situations, and does some reorganizational work with the Transactions Act that we now have presently. Members, this is very similar to what we have, where we have either bills from the ULC, have bars promulgated by the Bar Association, where it works its way through the sections. It's a matter without controversy. There are a number of states around the country that I think about 15, 16, that are, it's assumed, will make some of these same changes this session, with the expectation that over the next couple of years, probably all 50 states will do that to have conformity with this section of the law. Happy to answer any questions members might have.
Are there any questions? Any discussion? Then the Secretary will give Senate File 1816 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1816, a bill for an act relating to property, regulating property transfers.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, there being 59 yeas and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill on special orders is number 155 on general orders, House File 283, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, House File 283 is in regards to Camp Ripley. Camp Ripley currently has a program called ACUB, Army Compatible Use Buffer. The ACUB program is intended to protect the mission of Camp Ripley by creating a permanent buffer around Camp Ripley that is compatible with the camp's mission. One of the things that Camp Ripley does is blow up ordnances so loud that you can hear them 10, 15, 20 miles away. And so they want to be proactive with dealing with landowners around Camp Ripley. So in 2004, they developed a program with the federal government to help enter into mostly compatible leases with landowners around Camp Ripley, willing landowners, keeping the land in the state that it was in. So if it was ag, it stays ag. If it's ag, forest, it stays forest. Whatever situation it was in, that they keep it that way, so that it doesn't continue to develop residential property around Camp Ripley.
It's been a very, very successful program. The communities around Camp Ripley have been very favorable towards their approach. Since 2004, the Department of Defense has contributed $23 million to this effort, and Lasard SAM has contributed $4 million. Now, the federal government has a specific name for this called the Sentinel Landscape Program, which is designed to preserve the working and rural character of our private lands, in this case around Camp Ripley. They have just earmarked approximately $8 million for programs like this around the country. Camp Ripley is on the leading edge of this and wants to move forward with that. Those funds are available at the end of May, and so by voting for this, they will be able to do that in a prompt fashion. Thank you, members.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 283 its third reading.
House File Number 283, a bill for an act relating to the military, designating certain lands around Camp Ripley as Sentinel Landscape.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Nothing? Senator Bach, that's the end of the special order list. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Wednesday, April 29th, 9 a.m.
I forgot to ask for announcements. I didn't know you were going to move to adjourn. Announcements?
Madam President.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, the Environment, Economic Development, and Agricultural Finance Division will meet in room 107 at 4 o'clock.
Any other announcements? Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Hayden, Brown all day, Reinert 145 to 230, Bach 215 to 3, Reinert 255 to 310, Bach and Cohen 315 to 330. Any other announcements? Then on the motion to adjourn, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.